Bates versus Hamilton, Mr. Katsowski.
May it please the court, my name is James E. Katsowski and I represent the appellant Vaughn Hamilton in this matter. In June of 1993, Mr. Hamilton was sentenced for escape, and that escape resulted from a walkaway from a work detail. Incidentally, his sentence on that escape was 30 days. In January of 2003, Mr. Hamilton found himself before the sentencing court in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and the proposal was to enhance his sentence as a career offender based on that escape conviction. The defense objected, and the circuit in the district judge ruled that he's bound by the recent case of United States v. Bryant and denied the defense request.
How do you distinguish the case from Bryant?
As I put in my brief in chief, I don't think there is a legal distinction between the situation in Bryant and Mr. Hamilton's situation. However, I think for reasons I can go into in just a second, I think the reasoning in Bryant should be overruled. First of all, Bryant comes to the absolute conclusion that the categorical approach disallows a look at underlying facts. In other words, if the state, even if it's committed in a nonviolent fashion, can't look at that, just look at the fact of conviction for escape. However, just 9 days prior to the decision in Bryant, this court did look at underlying facts and did come to the conclusion that involuntary manslaughter can both be involuntary, it can both be nonviolent and violent, looked at underlying facts to find that in that situation, United States v. Hernandez, that it was a violent situation. I did not cite Hernandez in any of my briefs because in the case itself, it notes that nobody argued that they shouldn't look beyond the facts, beyond the conviction to the facts. So it's really not on point. The reason I bring it up here today is it underscores how important it is to look at underlying facts, how useful it is by sentencing courts, the fact that sentencing courts still do it.
They rejected that in a whole range of cases going far beyond escape.
Yes, but this court, I'll start with the United States v. Shannon from 1997. Even that case allows for an exception if it is impossible to decide whether the underlying offense was violent or not violent. And that exception was confirmed as recently as 1992 by this court, as recently as 2002 by this court. So this exception has been tagging along with all these cases to which Your Honor refers. But when it comes to whether it can be used to deny or to avoid an enhancement, it seems to be an absolute preclusion. The United States Supreme Court case that's somewhat on point, although I argued in my brief it's probably not on point, from 1990 also allows an exception to this, what's called the categorical approach, if it's used to enhance a sentence. But when it comes to the defense wanting to go beyond the mere fact of conviction to avoid the enhancement, it's been categorically denied. And I think that poses due process and equal protection problems, and it also poses problems with the decision in Bryant because it leaves district courts, defense attorneys, prosecutors unable to properly identify what's really a crime of violence. And that's what happened in Bryant, that's what happened in Hamilton.
Haven't most circuits have looked at this, come down the same way.
Is Your Honor asking about escape or the categorical approach? Escape. I think there's five or six circuits that have opined on escape, and all of them have found escape to be a violent felony. But as I put in my reply brief, all of those cite the same few cases, and they all come down to one or two cases where they kind of cut and paste some flowery language like powder kegs and supercharged emotions. Those terms come from a case where there was two individuals trying to break into it.
Wasn't that a case about underage sex?
It was, but
I mean, clearly, you know, underage sex covers a wide range of conduct. And it's one thing if there's a small child involved, another if there's 16-year-olds. So that seems to be a category that's insolubly ambiguous. But in the case of escape, while there can be peaceful escapes, when you have a person who escapes from a prison or even a halfway house, and then of course he's being chased by the police and so on, there is a significant danger of violence.
I can answer your honor two ways. One, I think escape, even more so than second-degree sexual assault of a child, as that's defined in Wisconsin, it runs a wider spectrum than second-degree sexual assault of a child. As I put in my brief, I was involved in a case where a guy who went on an unauthorized cigarette break was charged with escape because it's an unlawful, he left without permission while he was out on work release. The other end of the spectrum is killing a guard and making a run for it. So if there's any cases that are exceptions, escape should be one of them.
Well, the problem we take the position is made our public policy will kind of discourage people from escaping. And so they go to the categorical apparently maybe escape. It's a threat of force to a felony, and they're going to go delving into the facts because it raises the possibility, the specter of somebody being hurt in the process. Why are you going to find them?
I think there's public policy against people committing any type of felony.
Well, let's say this particular one, because once you've been charged with a crime, when you've been incarcerated, you're in custody, one form or another, that more than like sure that you're going to stay in that custody, and we say, if you try to escape, we're going to discuss whether you did sneakily, you crept off quietly, or just going to say, bang, it's a forcible felony, and you're stuck.
Except, I understand what Your Honor is saying, but we can't forget what we're trying to interpret is what is a violent felony or a crime of violence.
No, we're trying to figure out a whole bunch of things. One of those, we have to say something is a violent felony. And if Pauline Vermeer, for instance, if even though an 8-year-old girl says that she's perfectly willing to involve herself in sexual activity, you say it's a violent crime no matter what you do. And it's just going to point it out, however, it's a 7-year-old, 18-year-old boyfriend and a 16-year-old girlfriend. And sexual relationship is entirely different.
Right, but in Wisconsin it would be charged identical.
I understand.
Which is part of what I'm arguing, that looking at the information, especially...
I'm worried at the moment about Wisconsin's proportion answer. What I have to talk about is, and we did that at a different level altogether, but what we're talking about here is what sort of policy pronouncement do you give us to say we should overrule not only by all the other cases and all the other circuits? Why? What policy is it?
The policy is the policy behind the crime of violence. It's supposed to capture people who have committed violence on a regular basis and have made a lifetime of it. And by
not
that,
well, your theory of the thing, but it may not be ours.
Well, that's
there's no lifetime. That's the difference there. That's for severe offenders. There's no lifetime requirement for.
It's not a requirement.
Violence.
Taylor v. United States, the 1990 case I spoke of earlier, it does say almost exactly that. This crime of violence. I see I'm out of time. I'm going to finish if that's okay with the court. It does say the reason we have this enhancement for people who've committed two or more of these violent felonies is because we want to enhance, we want to juice them up at sentencing because of what they've done. They've committed violence at least twice in the past. When you don't allow a look at underlying facts, you're both going to enhance people who were not actually violent, and you're going to miss enhancing people who were actually violent. And I think that answers the public policy that we should be looking at here. We're trying to capture violent people and avoid enhancing nonviolent people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Ms. Watson?
May it please the court, Mr. Kowalski. My name is Kelly Watchka. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, and I represent the United States in this matter. The district court appropriately applied this court's holding in the Bryant decision in determining that the defendant's escape conviction constituted a crime of violence under the sentencing guidelines. The defendant has simply failed to articulate a sufficient reason why this panel should overrule binding circuit precedent very recently set forth in the Bryant decision, particularly in light of the fact that the defense counsel has conceded this morning that we cannot distinguish this case factually from Grimes, nor are the arguments that he has raised, frankly, any different than those that were espoused by defendants in Bryant and its predecessor, Franklin. Perhaps recognizing this weakness, the defendant has argued or asserted that in adopting a categorical approach, this court somehow misconstrued the holding in the Supreme Court's Taylor decision. However, frankly, the defendant's reliance upon Taylor is misplaced.
Well, I think his argument is that some of these escapes really are, I mean, what if a person, I wasn't quite sure what he meant by his work release, but suppose you're on work release, you have a job, and now you play hooky one day. Would that be an escape?
Under the statute that was charged in this case, yes, it would, Your Honor. And I will agree with you.
So you're not escaping from incarceration, you're just leaving your job.
Well, it's an unauthorized departure. If you're from
the workplace, though, rather than from a place of incarceration.
If your privileges are limited to leaving your place of incarceration for purposes of work, I would argue, Your Honor, that that is an escape under the statute. Regardless, I think that the focus should remain, as this court has emphasized in its past decisions, not on the manner in which an escape was actually committed, violent or otherwise, but on the potential that that situation creates for physical injury to another person. And that has been this court's focus, as has it been the focus of the other six circuits.
Are there statistics on that, or is it just a judicial guess?
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting question. I know that this circuit, in the Franklin decision, noted that the defendant had failed to come forward with statistics demonstrating that escapes present a low risk of physical injury to others. I am unaware of any risks.
I'm aware of any
statistics. Thank you. But regardless, I think it's fair to say, and the assumption that courts make, is that escapees are persons who have already demonstrated a disregard for law enforcement, and they have created a situation whereby others will be seeking their recapture. And it's a situation that is loaded with a number of different scenarios, and it is not unlike, for example, and this was an example I believe cited in the Taylor decision, a burglar who encounters a homeowner who unexpectedly returns home. That is why the focus should remain on the potential for injury, and that is why this court should, consistent with its prior decisions in Bryant and in Franklin, affirm the defendant's sentence in this matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Watch. Mr. Kanelski, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you. A couple of things real quick. Taylor, as cited by everybody so far this morning, allows for exceptions in certain circumstances. As I argued, escape runs such a large spectrum. If any exceptions are allowed, escape should be one of them. Ms. Lotka brought up burglary, and there's a lot of case law on burglary because it's defined differently in different states. But what the federal courts have done is defined a generic burglary so they know whether it comes under the crime of violence or not. Perhaps it's time to define a generic escape that means escape from actual custody. And I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Kalkin. You were appointed, were you not? The court thanks you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.